on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
Not being in a victim mentality is important. Of course, it's easy to fall into that sometimes when things get really rough, right? And so being able to accept that from the root of it is really important. This is also another thing that we can do as women is to encourage the men who are already supporting women around us to be supporting women more. I know we talk about like women supporting women, but a huge part of that environment that we live in, I'm in, right? And maybe us giving that kind of a environment for them to support women even more, you know, will help that to accelerate the entire process of like what Namita mentioned about like not viewing us through a gender lens.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast. This is an episode that is in light of the International Women's Day, focusing on the topic of empowering the voices of women in legal tech. And for this, I am joined by three incredible women and female entrepreneurs in legal tech, Dorna Moini, Namita Shah, and Sherilyn Tan. To all three of you, welcome to the show. It's honestly great to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
I'm looking forward to it as well.
Now, usually I actually introduce each of my guests on my podcast, but I think I could honestly fill a whole episode just talking about you guys. So what I want to do is give you guys the floor to talk about yourselves for a couple of minutes, introduce yourselves, what your background is, and basically what led you into legal tech. Sherilyn, would you like to kick off this episode?
Sure. I'm Sherilyn, the CEO and founder of Interstellar Group. So under Interstellar Group, there are two main brands. One of them is Asia Law Network, which was started in 2014 when I was really looking for a lawyer at that point in time, trying to deal with some contract work. I'm not a lawyer by training. I'm an accountant by training. And in that point, I was trying to exit a business and trying to find a lawyer. It's interestingly frustrating because in today's world you'll expect that you know you can find lawyers really quickly, but that was not the case. So we started Asia Law Network to kind of have all the lawyers on a platform that are able to do you know different kinds of law, and we work very closely with the Ministry of Law, with the Law Society, to make sure that we have quality lawyers on the platform. Of course, after 3 years of starting Asia Law Network, we've actually extended that platform to kind of build out the technology to help law firms to automate themselves. And that is Tesseract.io, which is a workflow automation platform for law firms and all other professional firms so that they can manage their cases and billings on a cloud-native platform. So that's my journey into legal tech and also into professional and reg tech.
Super interesting. I'm intrigued to know because you obviously all have like a different story. Yeah, all you kind of entered into legal tech.
Yes.
This is a story that makes everyone unique. Thank you for your introduction. Namita, what's your story?
Sure. So I'm Namita. I'm the co-founder of Prizolve 360. But before I talk about what that does, let me talk about what happened and what led us to Prizolve 360 in a few sentences. So I'm taken back actually about half a decade ago where I was sitting in the Supreme Court, which is the apex court in India. And it was one of my co-founder's father's personal matter. The matter was going on for about 29, 30 years and it predated my birth back then. And the judge suddenly says, he tells my co-founder that your father started this litigation and your son will have to conclude it. So why don't you actually settle it? Now, after 29 years of litigation, this is what the Supreme Court is telling one of the litigating parties, that why don't you settle it? And this actually took me back to my experiences. I come from a qualification of chartered accountancy and law. And in my entire experience also, I realized that this very problem actually affected from the top business people to even a local shop vendor. Everybody has this problem of disputes. They're absolutely inevitable. But the resolution of it is a huge challenge, you know, especially from the country that I come from. Of course, they're doing their best, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done when it comes to resolving disputes and access to justice. And that's when on that bench, we all three co-founders were together, and we decided that, okay, now we want to be part of the solution and not the problem. And that led us to co-found Prizolv 360, which is an online dispute resolution platform that helps people resolve disputes completely online in a matter of a few clicks and in about 1/50th the time that it otherwise takes to resolve disputes here. The idea is to ensure digital access to justice to everybody. And that's how we came about co-founding Prizolv 360.
Very interesting. I see the background in accounting kind of matches also Sherilyn. What she just explained. That's really nice to see. Thank you also for giving your introduction. And finally, we have Dorna.
Yes, thank you. I am the CEO of Documate, and we are a no-code legal practice automation software that allows you to build everything from internal document automation through client-facing legal applications. Some of the tools that you may have heard of that have been built on our platform include tools like Hello Divorce and Landlord Legal and Wills Online. So lots of different tools that can be built. But my journey into legal tech actually started when I was at a law firm. I practiced mostly corporate litigation, but I also did some pro bono work with domestic violence survivors in my prior practice. And it was that work with pro bono domestic violence survivors that led me to want to basically build an application. So what I did while I was at the law firm was I built a tool for domestic violence survivors to be able to come onto the platform, enter a series of information related to their data, be guided down different paths, generate documents, potentially be connected to an attorney if that was necessary at different stages, and then file documents. So really end-to-end, everything that you would need in your domestic violence case. And so we launched that tool, and what that led us to realize was that there were so many other lawyers who wanted to build tools in similar tools, but in different areas of law and in different jurisdictions. So that's kind of what led us to build Documate. We wanted to build something that was no code, that was really easy to use, but where any lawyer with all the expertise that exists inside of their heads can come and turn it into a legal business and legal platform.
Super interesting. And I think, like, honestly, I could ask you guys so much more about the actual working of the platforms that you built. But I think for this episode, of course, the topic is about you guys as women in the industry. And I think this was really nice background to kind of get an insight into, okay, so what are you guys doing? But I'm really interested to hear about your experience in founding the company and in founding or in leading and being a leader in the legal tech space, especially as women. So I'm interested to hear from you guys and feel free to discuss, or maybe there are some things that you all feel the same about or don't agree with each other about, that could be the case. Have you experienced any inequality throughout your journey as women in the legal tech space?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, being a woman in the legal tech space, I think, and really speaking about inequality in general, it's a little bit difficult to know sometimes whether you have experienced inequality or no. I will say that there has just been so much support and community in being a woman in legal tech, because so many of the other founders who exist who are women have probably given me maybe an unfair advantage because they've supported me because they're also women. So very, very early on in my journey, I feel like just over social media, I've met so many other amazing female founders who have gone through from you know, the baby stage of companies to really growing a company and scaling it, and we've been able to share those experiences. So I think it's a little bit difficult to say if that inequality has existed, but I will say that there definitely has been a lot of support that I have witnessed firsthand as a result of being a woman in legal tech.
Super interesting. And Namita, would you agree with that? Or what's your experience been?
Sure. I think this is a very, very interesting question with a lot of facets to it. So I'll put it this way, that legal and tech, both as individual industries, are definitely more male dominated. And to be a woman in legal tech is definitely still today a little rare, a little bit of an exception rather than the norm. But I think that's the beauty of it, right? like, you know, as Dorna also said, when you enter a space where you see less of women, the women actually help each other as well. So on one hand, yes, I have witnessed many instances of that inequality, but I believe that that's still unfortunately general across industries for women, where you already start with 100 steps behind from the start line, mm-hmm. where others, the male counterparts start at the start line. But I think that's what also makes it more challenging and interesting, because you do also then get to leverage a lot of support along the way. So there's a community that I've found in India and even internationally that has actually come together to help women in legal tech do something. And I at least hope, or you know, that after me, if there is some woman who wants to enter the legal tech industry, doesn't have to think about it from the lens of gender. So it's also upon us, if we say something, to look at it and ensure that the future doesn't have to go through what we did. And I did experience a lot of that support as well. In India and even internationally, some of the groups have really been very supportive in terms of helping navigate through these challenges. So on one hand, when yes, there is inequality, on the other hand, there's also support. So I wouldn't say both are in equal proportions. Of course, the inequality scale is a little higher than the support. But I think that, you know, when you really want to do something, you end up doing it either way. And you also then become the change you want to see. So I'm definitely attempting to go for that.
No, it's super interesting, because I feel that there's so much attention on this topic of inequality that we kind of, maybe it's just for my side, but we kind of miss this more nuanced view on the topic. And even I'm also guilty of thinking that way. Sherlyn, yes. What are your thoughts? I see you're laughing.
I think Dorna and Namita have basically mentioned like the key aspects of being a woman in legal and tech. Well, maybe I would like to bring in like the part on inequality more so, not so much, you know, as a woman, but I think interestingly, I mean, this is a very popular question, right, about being female and whether that kind of like puts us behind in some of the things that we have to pursue. But like, I think that a lot of other inequality issues that we might want to address, for example, I think Namita has mentioned also that she's accounting trained, and, you know, so am I. So sometimes even like working in the legal fraternity, you're talking about, hey, can we be more inclusive? Can the lawyers, you know, like include other professionals in brainstorming for solutions or technology for the entire industry? I mean, law itself doesn't work on its own, right? Like every single law firm is a business. So maybe, you know, if we think about it from that lens, there's a lot more effort that we can put into to be more inclusive in legal tech, for it not to just include lawyers, but also to include all the other people in business that can actually really help to push the industry forward.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Dorna.
Yeah. I definitely agree. I think that there's definitely a lot of other aspects of inequality. That one thing that I would mention is that they've been sort of tempered down a little bit in the past 2 years with everything going remote first, because I know that prior to the pandemic, when everything was in person, you saw people in person. Sales was done in person. Everyone knew who you were. You had lots of really lots of long, small talk conversations that led people to know your background, know whether you were female, what everything was about you. Now, with everything being a little bit more remote, you have almost like a glass that is in front of you between you and the customer, and between you and anyone else that you're speaking with in the legal profession, or whoever your customers may be, that may reduce a bit that inequality, because we are all just transacting through the computer.
Actually, that's really true. That's really true. I mean, I experienced the same thing. Like now we're all people on the screen and we have this list of things to go through and all these tasks that we need to complete and to discuss, right? So it makes it a bit more level playing field, I guess, in some way.
You know, picking up from Sherlyn's point that, you know, to be more inequality from a different lens and to be more inclusive towards those from different backgrounds. Coming to the term legal tech, I think lawyers are still not even inclusive of tech people. You know, they often see people from the technology background, and especially if you're a woman from a technology background, that somebody suddenly, you know, all their alert guns go up and suddenly they're like, okay, you know, these people are here to, I don't know what impression they have, but they feel like, okay, these people are here to, we just have to fight with them. They're here for a war. And that's typically the environment when you mix lawyers and people from the tech background in the same room. And then you add the lens of gender to it. I think you can just imagine, you know, a pretty small scale version of kind of like a global war happening in that room. That's how it typically is. But I think the pandemic has also made them also more aware that they cannot operate without technology. And definitely law also is being revolutionized by tech, just like all the other industries have. Today, the way we live, the way we conduct business, the way we communicate has been, you know, fully revolutionized by tech. And slowly, definitely steadily, but slowly, lawyers are also recognizing that the norms that existed even 5 years ago don't anymore today. And they can't do without tech, and they definitely can't do without women as well.
It's an interesting development that you guys are mentioning here. And I'm also interested to hear from you if you think that this is something lasting, because I can imagine that, you know, these maybe more inherent biases that exist amongst us are extremely old. And this development with the COVID pandemic, for instance, and digitalization is relatively new. Do you think that this is something that will continue to develop, or is this something that won't last on the longer term?
I think it will continue. Well, unfortunately, even as of now, we don't kind of have a clear picture on how the future is going to be. I mean, we have one variant after another. And I think people are thinking also not just about this pandemic, but what is the next? When is the next going to come, right? So people are clearly taking a bit more steps to kind of think of business continuity, how that's going to affect even our workforce where people have to work from home. In Singapore alone, I think we see a lot of teams that are, you know, because in Singapore, we're headquartered for like the Asia region. So you see a lot of teams, some of them which are really badly affected, and they had to kind of rejig their whole org structure because of that, right? And like you have a whole, for example, customer service team in another country, and you know they're very badly affected. No one can go to work. So I think those problems are going to continue to exist. And as people start to accept the new future of work, right, which means like, you know, you get a kind of like hybrid system going on, and where people start to settle into that, there is definitely a need for different ways of digitalization, different ways of communicating. Even internally within our own company right now, we're talking about how we can communicate effectively online, how to lead online. I mean, it's not you know, a way of like how you can just tell someone over face-to-face in the office, hey, you know, you got to work on something and everyone knows about it. You really need to make it an intentional effort to lead and to work in a different manner. And technology is going to play a big part in that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, Sherilyn. I think that where we are today and where we're going was always somewhere that we were going to land. And the pandemic and COVID has really only accelerated the transition to that destination. And so I think that a lot of companies are really rethinking what the future looks like, and the future definitely doesn't look like what it did in 2019 or 2020. It's changing and transforming and leading us to have a lot of internal discussions about you know everything that we're talking about today. And the nice thing about it is that we're sort of able to start with a clean slate, because whereas previously change comes incrementally, we all of a sudden all had to change everything. And so we can start anew in whatever way we want to. So we're almost lucky a little bit in that way, at least when it comes to the changing work styles.
I think Shell and Donna put it beautifully. I absolutely agree. And to my mind, I definitely feel that there's definitely going to be a pre-COVID and a post-COVID era itself in history, where everything that we were used to before, just like the earlier revolutions have happened, this is one such revolution. You know, we may call it COVID revolution, tech revolution, any other name that we want, but this has definitely put down that particular movement in history. And things are not going to be the same, according to me, the way they were before, because these 2 years have given us an opportunity, forced upon us an opportunity to look at how technology can actually leverage everything that we do. You know, there are so many things that we otherwise did previously that we could eliminate, that we could more effectively use technology. And things will continue that way because people now see benefits of a hybrid model of reality vis-a-vis virtualism coming together. So I'm not saying that it's going to be work from home permanently or something like that, but a hybrid model where some things are only done by technology and some things then are exclusively left for humans would be a world that would continue to exist. So at least that's what I believe, that this is here to stay and it's permanent irrespective of whether a pandemic stays or not.
No, interesting that you guys mentioned that. And what I find especially interesting that we could basically then say that pre-pandemic, there was obviously this whole discussion, and it's still obviously a discussion, about this unequal position that women have in the legal tech domain. I mean, I came to talk about this episode. Actually, I had an episode with the founder of Regulation. I don't know, maybe you guys know the company, but that's a UK-based company. And actually, only at the end of the episode, we came to the topic of her role as a woman in legal tech. Unfortunately, the episode was done by that time. So I figured like this would actually be a really interesting topic. And I started reading into the role of women in the field and how there is a lot of discussion about there. You know, there are too little women that are actually taking on positions within legal tech, and let alone leading positions. But this could potentially then change after the pandemic, seeing as this kind of gives a new start and also creates some sort of equal or a level playing field for men and women. But I'm interested to hear your take on this problem, because obviously like a lot of people are actually mentioning this as a huge issue. But you also mentioned like the topic of support and that you haven't really necessarily noticed only the negative sides of this issue. So I'm just interested to hear from you, like, how should we put this into perspective? Sherilyn, have you maybe got, I see that you're thinking, but yeah. I don't know if you have a direct response.
I think being in legal tech has multiple prongs of like inequality or issues that, you know, inherently exist in the system itself. So one, technology itself, right? Namita mentioned alone, we're facing issues with, you know, having very few female leaders, very few female founders. Interestingly, in legal tech, it's separate. Like, I think there's about a 40-60% of female to male founders in legal tech. But in tech alone, that is a problem. And because of that, you're talking about only like 3% of, you know, total venture capital funds that are being like given to females, right? So that is a very skewed number already. So you're talking about, you know, really few female representation, female guidance, female leaders that can be out there to kind of show how it's being done. You're talking also about like venture capital firms that are also very male dominated. There is that shift in power, right, where it comes to how technology companies are already being viewed as. And in legal itself, it's a very small market, right? I mean, if you talk about legal as an industry alone, a lot of times that, you know, not just me facing it as a startup, I guess, I'm sure both of you probably have faced that, is that the addressable market is already isolated to the legal industry, right? And that's one part. And so it's kind of like a double issue right there, where in technology, you have very few female representation, not in the startups itself, but in the ecosystem, right, of how a startups has to work. True fundraising, or you know, whether there's acquisitions or all these other activities within startups that helps it to flourish. And the other part of it, where it is legal as an industry, where people look at it or the funds look at it as something that's really isolated and small. So there's two parts to kind of like work things out and to kind of convince the business and the market. Of course, results is the best way to show it. But at the beginning of it, where you're trying to get traction, when you're trying to get people to believe you, that's one thing that, you know, I think personally, I face a lot more problems having to do that, which is why I think, you know, since 2014, that's like 7 years ago. And I've been in this journey for some time and trying to prove that out. And even in Asia, right, where I guess SaaS companies, are still trying to find their footing in Asia. Unlike, for example, in the North Americas, where I think there's a lot of understanding in how software can already solve many problems. So there's I think different layers to that, to the environment that we work and that we evolve in.
Yeah, Dorna, yeah. What's your view on this? Because you're in North America. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, picking up from what Sherilyn says, I think that it's true that it's very important that we kind of start with the roots and help the founders in legal tech from the beginning. And I think what I'm seeing, at least here in the US, is a lot of hope, because there are so many women who are now, who have been successful in this field, who are now going out and investing back into the community, either by starting their own venture capital funds. You know, there are so many, at least here, I feel like I hear about every few weeks, I hear about a new venture capital firm who is focused on diversity and women investments. And so whether that be at the global kind of venture capital firm stage, or whether that's just individuals who are becoming angels and investing back, or that is individuals who are going back and speaking to younger founders or more junior founders as they're getting off the ground, just to inspire them and let them know that there's a different path forward. I think there's that it's very important to have those that type of model out there for you to look at, but I'm seeing that happening more and more.
I need to move there.
I need to get some of that energy here in India, for sure.
Exactly. Hopefully we'll send it over your way.
Yes. So, your question actually takes me back to an episode that I saw on Netflix by Vox. The series is called Explained, and there was one specifically on gender discrimination at workplace. And one of the incidents that they speak about, I'll just share it with you all. So what happens when there is a picture of a family on a man's desk versus a woman's desk? Okay, it's something as general as that. So when there is a picture of a family on the man's desk, work desk, it is seen that, oh, this is such a good man. You know, he's focused on his family, he's working, and he still has a picture of them on the desk and all of that. And then there's a picture of the family on a woman's desk, the perception is, oh, is she really serious about her work? She'll only be thinking about what's happening at home. Maybe this is not a good employee. And I think that is actually depicting the root of these inequalities that exist. But at the same time, then there is also a responsibility to look at how to change that, to having these conversations that it's okay for a woman also to lead. And it's not only women-based seminars that require this, it's also seminars that include men and that, as a society as a whole, then learn to accept that, yes, you know, it is okay for a woman as well to do the same, if not better, what a male counterpart is doing, and to accept that, you know, begin right from our own organizations to our entire communities as well. It is critical to, while going ahead, to understand that it is important for the younger generation, both boys and girls, to accept and believe that you cannot view a person from the gender of from the lens of gender at all. The idea of marking somebody itself as man or a woman itself is where the root cause lies. When you start seeing somebody based on their gender rather than on their work or their abilities or their leadership skills, I think that is where inequality begins.
Yeah.
And having such concepts being taught in schools, colleges, management colleges also becomes absolutely critical, which is still missing. Where things like these that are actually crucial to leadership and to change at the global level requires to be done. And I think we can start from at least our organizations and have take the extra effort to promote women. I'm not saying to be biased towards women, but to give them the additional help that's required only because they're already starting from way behind. So it's not to favor women, it's to extend certain benefits to let them at least have an opportunity of a level playing field. And, there are organizations that are doing this. In fact, the Indian government also is taking a lot of initiative in this regard as well to promote women entrepreneurship and women in leadership roles. But of course, still this exists and a lot of work definitely needs to be done in this area. And it also begins with women also believing that they can also hold leadership positions.
Absolutely.
And do equal or better work.
trying to support women.
Because it's a really interesting point that you make, and that, you know, there is change that we can make as women ourselves as well. And that's something that I always find extremely interesting. And you might have already seen this in some of the questions that I set up for our talk today, is that we tend to focus a lot on, for instance, what the male community thinks, or the way they should change their mind. But it's also a question like, should we as women ourselves kind of change the way in which we look at this topic? You know, are we putting ourselves too much in like a victim's position, rather than kind of getting out of that, which makes sense, I think, at least. But I'm interested to hear also from Sherlyn and from Dorna what your thoughts are also. And also Namita, but obviously you started the the topic. You know, is this also very much on us, the fact that we're still in this position, rather than only blaming others for putting us there?
Yeah, I think not being in a victim mentality is important. Of course, it's easy to fall into that sometimes when things get really rough, right? And for example, I think there was a time where I was actually fundraising when I was pregnant. And you can imagine there's no activities that can be part of that involves, like, for example, going out for a drink in a bar, or, you know, to hang out with other startup founders, or because you just don't have that energy, right? But I think being able to accept that and to kind of figure out which are things that you can do, want to do, don't want to do, and just accept that as reality and kind of push forward in the things that you can do. So being able to accept that from the root of it is really important. So after, you know, giving birth and, you know, coming back out, I decided, hey, you know, I'm just going to wear a t-shirt and track pants and see where this goes, because I'm just sick of like dressing up anyways. Sorry, this is just a personal sharing. And it ends up that, you know, that the people that you want to be there for you are people who can accept you for who you are, right? And that's very important. Then you then attract the good people to be around you. And this is also another thing that we can do as women, is to encourage the men who are already supporting women around us to be supporting women more. So I know we talk about like women supporting women, but a huge part of that environment that we live in, I'm in, right? And maybe us giving that kind of a environment for them to support women even more, you know, will help that to accelerate the entire process of like what Namita mentioned about like not viewing us through a gender lens.
Yeah, and I think part of that that kind of education to the male community and to the female community, it really goes back to just being conscious of our biases. Because I think, you know, I can't say universally, but for many of the people that I meet on a day-to-day basis, at least in my work, I feel like there's definitely no intent to be unequal or to be biased or to be viewing things through a gendered lens. And if anything, you know, there's very much a very big stigma around being sexist or being not valuing people for their true value. So what it really comes down to is being able to really double check ourselves on a daily basis and thinking, okay, you know, I'm an investor talking with Sherlyn. Am I being impacted by the fact that she's pregnant, for example? You know, am I being impacted by the fact that how would I view this if I were speaking to a male in the same exact position who had a wife who was pregnant or who had just had a baby? It's really now where I think we're in a stage in our society now where a lot of that, you know, we talk so much about unconscious bias. A lot of it is unconscious bias. And so having conversations like this are what are going to help us move to that next phase of having true equality.
No, I think that's very interesting. And now you're saying this. Sorry, do you have anything you want to add? Also? Oh,
I was just going to say one more thing, is that it kind of actually what we were talking about earlier about being remote and being online, changing everything applies here again. Because Sherlyn, I don't know when you fundraised, but I just fundraised while pregnant and it all happened over Zoom. So no one really has to know what's happening below the screen.
That's such a great strategy. I mean, unconscious. But that's great. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Congrats.
I think firstly, I have to say congratulations to Sherlyn, Dorna, to actually literally inspired me to know that, okay, yes, we can do it all. I think thank you for sharing those personal experiences. Definitely a boost of inspiration for me today morning. I'd also like to add that playing the victim card is actually an easy way out. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist. Definitely it does. I fully acknowledge it. But I definitely do believe, you know, it's like in school, if you are good at 5 subjects and not good at 2 subjects, that doesn't mean you can play the victim card that, oh, I'm just not inherently good at it. You know, you still then start to take extra help, take tutoring, learn more, spend more energy on that, and then try and, you know, clear those subjects. So I think this is also similar to that, where, you know, it's like you're just given a deck of cards, and maybe this is something, unfortunately, that, you know, you have to work a little more towards. And that's where, you know, support groups exist. Lots of things exist, but it's also on that particular individual to go out there, seek it, take that extra effort, and actually embrace all the help that you're getting. So I'm not saying that you're not behind in the race because of your gender. Yes, you are, but that also means you just have to work a little harder to cross the line. That's it. It's not an uncrossable line. And playing the victim card would just be giving up even before starting the race. So at least over time, and my experiences have taught me to look at the entire gender debate like that, that yes, it's something I need to work harder towards. I know it. I hope that after me, nobody has to. I'll do my bit to ensure that as much as possible. But I do know that should I extend my hand out, there are support groups that are right there to help me clear the line. So that's what my experience has taught me.
No, definitely interesting. And I'm definitely not a founder in legal tech, so I honestly am not sure if I have anything to say at all. But I think there are really interesting points that you all are making, really. And also what I found interesting is the point of education and talking, you know, starting these discussions, that might be at the basis also beyond women themselves taking the initiative to actually get out of this position and really make the extra effort to get to where they want to. And I think that's also a nice, it'd be a nice point to move towards the wrap up. From all three of you, I'm interested to hear, for anyone that, or any women that are interested in kind of following the same or similar path that you guys did, and really obtaining kind of a leadership role in the legal tech field, what advice would you give to them?
Just do it, because if you feel like it's something you have to do, then do it, right? Whether it's legal tech or any other environment or technology or business, I think women should really just go for your dreams, because that's how we can also inspire, you know, our next generation to do the same. And if we were to take a step back and to kind of like, you know, prioritize other things in your life that's, you know, maybe not as big as what you think your dream is, then, you know, that's the kind of message we will be sending to our second generation, right? So for females out there, women out there, go for it. Just really, if you have a dream, go for it, right? And if you don't worry. I mean, it will come to you.
No, that's a really nice, a very nice message, I think, very inspirational also. And especially, in all honesty, also the fact that if somebody doesn't actually have such a dream, I think that's also a problem, that we often feel very pressured to actually have a certain dream and follow a certain path, when, in all honesty, not everybody has that. And that's okay.
Yeah. Actually, on that note, something very interesting. Before I started Asia Law Network, I was involved in 2 other businesses, but I was not the main leader or the founder or anything behind that, right? But doesn't mean that there was not moments and learnings I had taken away from those businesses. And so if you don't have one, it's totally okay to be rallying for someone else or to join someone else in their dream. Because not everyone needs to play that same role, right? If all of us are going to be founders at any one point in time, then they're not going to be any followers or people who are going to do or be part of a team that kind of, make things happen.
No, that's definitely an interesting point. Thanks also for highlighting that as a side note. I think that's very interesting. Dorna, what advice would you give?
Yeah, I would say that relationships are the absolute most important thing for your success in your career, whether you want to be a legal tech founder or whether you want to do something completely different. And if you're listening to this podcast, and the more junior you are, the more opportunity you have in front of you to just make friends. Like every single person who you have around you in school or in work, be friendly with them, keep in touch with them, because you have no idea how impactful those people could be for you in the future. Those are going to be your future clients, your future customers. Those could be the future people that you hire to work with you alongside you to support you in different roles. And so I think that that's the number one most important thing. And if you do that early on, you will have people to rely on, to get advice from, to bring on to your team many, many years down the line.
Now, networking. I think that as you, when you're young, at least from my perspective and some of my friends, it's always like, oh, you know, the networking drives everybody nuts. But it's true. Like, it really does make a difference. So I think that's really great advice. And Namita, yeah, finally.
I think Sherilyn and Donna have given such beautiful advice. You know, what I would also like to add to that is that you don't need 100 steps figured out on day one. It's okay just to know step one and then build along the way, because a solution doesn't exist in a sandbox. It exists in the real world. So don't build and then launch a progress over perfection, and just take the first step and the road will show its way to you. So go ahead and do it. As long as you have that first step and that idea you are committed to, you have everything about entrepreneurship already sorted. And you have everything about leadership already sorted. So just go out there and do it. Don't worry. The best teaching will come along the way only. Nothing can replicate that. So, and of course, just extend your hand for support and it will be there in terms of community, in terms of financial support, in terms of everything else. Just take that one additional step to ask for it.
Yeah. I think from all three of you, very inspirational advice that I think that a lot of people kind of need also, because you mentioned at the start also this aspect of support from women for women. So I think that anybody listening to this can kind of see, like, we have three women here who really, have lived according to this advice. So thank you very much for that. And then finally, before we actually wrap up this episode, I'm interested to hear from you. We've been looking at you guys as an inspiration to look up to in this episode, but I would love to hear a shout out from you guys to any female leader, either in legal tech or beyond, that has inspired you, and perhaps also why. Namita, let's start with you this time.
Sure. You know, I think if I do take only one name, I'd be leaving aside all the other wonderful women doing absolutely fantastic work there. But definitely somebody I want to speak about is Priya Lele. She is from UK and she started this organization called She Breaks the Law. And it's about women in law and in legal tech that are actually breaking the glass ceiling with all the wonderful things that they're doing. And to have a community like that, it has global presence now. And to actually be part of something like that and to just, actually see live examples of somebody who's faced challenges and overcome it is absolutely inspirational. So definitely kudos to her, but also to all the other wonderful women now, also including Sherilyn and Donna on my list, who are doing such fabulous work.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for the shout out, Donna.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to, actually, she's one of our customers. Her name is Angela Giampolo, and she has started a legal tech business that is specifically for LGBTQ law. And what she does is she provides all sorts of things, mostly within the, you know, estate planning realm, name changes, divorces, wills, that are specifically targeted towards LGBTQ. And then she also has this organization called Caravan of Hope, where they go basically through the United States and provide legal services to people in the community who need it in this very specialized area of law. So I've found her journey very inspirational, and I hope to see her spread it as broadly as she can within the US and beyond.
Thank you very much. Sherilyn.
Okay, when you asked that question, I had like a list of women that came out in my head. Interestingly, under I just had to like share this because we did a huge feature of 20 women that were impactful in the legal industry in Asia. And we have that on Asia Law Network's blog. And, that includes like the CEO of Law Society of Singapore, the CEO of Singapore Academy of Law. All of them are women, interestingly. And they have done really incredible things in the digital transformation of the legal industry in the past 10 to 20 years or even more. And I might be doing a disservice to kind of like describe them here, but there's a lot of personal sharing inside those articles, which, you know, I encourage you guys to read.
No, that's honestly great. I'll share the article also to give some insight to the listeners, and maybe just generally, it's also interesting for all of us to take a look at. I want to thank all three of you for joining me. I think that this episode in itself might contribute to what we've been talking about, one step at a time, sharing a piece of knowledge and discussion on the topic. So I want to thank you. Thank you very much for joining me and for taking the time to talk about your experience and your thoughts.
Thank you so much for having us. We had a great time.
Thank you. This has been an absolute delight.
Yes, and it's so nice to learn from all of you.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review, as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast.